this is about the fifth or sixth time I'm speaking to this group. I probably wasn't challenging enough, otherwise you wouldn't have invited me back. I was a few years younger then, that's why. Now I'm older. The good thing about being older is you can say what you think. What are you going to do, fire me? But there's a real, I have to say, I'm of course, what I thought I'm going to talk about, a little bit the background, how I got to Ritz-Carlton, how we did it, how we did it. And that's because that's kind of the interest that is expressed to me to talk about. But I can tell you, this time, at this time, this stage of our country, man, am I tempted to make a few political statements. I hate it when people do that. They have a microphone, all of a sudden they take over and say it. But you know, but Bobby and I, we belong to Bible class 30 years together. I remember all we did, we studied the Bible. Now once in a while we sit down together and correct the world. If what we talk about sometimes on Friday mornings, if that would happen, we wouldn't have any problems. At least we believe that. So, but you know, I have probably a little bit different emotion than most of you about it, because I am an immigrant, if you will. By the way, legal. Just so you know, very legal. I went through all the interviews and the papers and at that time even medical examination and so on. And so having that background, you still have a somewhat different emotion about it. You still look at it from inside. Of course, I'm here since 1964. I mean, I'm American. Funny, when I go to Germany, people tell me, "You speak good German." Yeah, you know. So, but you know, there is still this seeing it from the outside and seeing it from the inside and so on. We are a Christian leaders in business. We're meeting for 37 years. Look, there are many other Christian leaders outside, and if I'm going to say anything here negative about Christian leaders, I'm talking about the people that didn't show up for the meeting here. Not you. Of course, not you. We're different. But somehow, the question, I have to ask myself the question, and I'm very much include myself, and in fact, I beat myself on those issues. The fact that we are in those 37 years, if you will, if you take a time frame, the fact that we are, forgive me, don't anybody get mad with me, it's just my opinion tonight. The fact that we are morally declining, they have declined in these 37 years. If you want examples, I can give them to you. I can talk about toilets and all kind of things. The fact that we are morally declining, maybe we failed as Christian leaders. Maybe we failed. Maybe we waited for others to do it, churches or whatever. Maybe we shouldn't wait for that. Maybe we should be taking over and set the future. And for this country, this country which was created by people, you know, when I'm so emotional about that, I can't even tell you. This country was which when I read, start reading the Constitution. Wow. When I studied how this was created, wow. People praying. Wow. It created the finest country ever in mankind ever saw. I'm going to tell you a silly example here. Please bear with me. Bear with me. Don't be angry that I'm doing that. I remember when I left Vietnam, I left home when I was 14. And I go back to that in a few minutes. I had begged my parents to work in the hotel business since I was 11 years old. They were nearly embarrassed that I did. They wanted me to become an architect or an engineer. But after begging them, they finally found me a busboy job away from home. I left home. I'm an elementary school dropout. Okay? If you haven't met one, now you know one. And when I came back home, bear with this silly story. Please bear with it for a moment. When I came home, I called the neighbor. I had a telephone. It was a business. And so they told my mother, and they called, oh, come over, and said, I'm coming home on Wednesday or Monday, whatever, for a few days. And she always said, what do you want me to cook? My mother. And I said, I tell you what, make the white bean soup and potato pancakes, which we ate on Fridays. And she made it. And it was great. And now next time, what do you want to cook? The same thing. That went for 40 years. No kidding. Always the first day she had one. It was great. I was looking for this bean soup. It was a great soup, man. Only the mother can cook it that way. And you had it in your mind. And this time I come home again after 40 some years. Come home again, have it in my mind. And she gave me the soup and it was different. Now why would you do different what works? I don't get it. I mean, it worked, Mom, it worked for 40-some years. Why do you make it different? I thought I'd make it different now. That's what I feel we're doing now here. This constitution has created the finest country ever. And now we decide to change the recipe a little bit. But don't take God out of it. And if we do anything, I'm not going to tell you who to, but don't worry, I'm not going to go that far. But ladies and gentlemen, are we Christians? Doesn't that mean our absolute priority is Christ? Absolute? Or we get pulled away by a lawsuit and this stuff and this stuff that happens. But isn't the focus Christ? If it is, then we cannot do anything or vote anything that takes anything away from that. Then we have to vote, have to go for that which keeps us in that direction. And you know, the strength that I had leaving 14, now I move away from that. Okay, now it can be made or it can be okay. Maybe it got it, maybe it didn't. But I got rid of it. I'm so glad I had a chance to at least say it a little bit. Let's do the right thing. Let us not fail. Let us take over. We are leaders. We are leaders of many people. Why don't we lead and take this to another direction? I grew up in a small village in Germany. And I was 14 when I left. I told you that. Just before that, I was confirmed in a Lutheran church. And in the Lutheran church, you go for a heavy Bible class 2 years before you get confirmed. Very rigorous, and as the pastor that gets to know you in that class very clearly and has for years gone to kindergarten school, we called it, and of course in school we prayed and we had a religion was in our certificate religion. Wow, and he gives us the word for our lives, and my word was, he will take you under his wings. I'm translating right now, so forgive me. And he will take you under his wings, and your confidence will be under his pinions. The truth of him will be your shield and armor. That was my equipment. That's what I had, besides two suitcases of clothes when I left home. I was told by my parents, who found the best hotel in the region about 100 miles away, I was told, now, this is a hotel where we could never go. This is only for important people. This is only, now, behave yourself accordingly. And my mother took me there. My father, of course, was working. My mother took me there. And when we arrived, the general manager talked to us and told us, this is only for very important guests. They're very important. Don't get envious. We are here to serve, learn to take care of them. They are very important. I knew when I was standing the next day with my little white coat and bow tie in the dining room, with knees shaking, that the people around me were very important. I learned at that time, the first thing we learned is how to clean an ashtray. What the heck did I learn today, I wonder? There are no more ashtrays. So that was the first thing I learned. And I went on learning and from a maitre d' that profoundly impacted me. Wednesdays, I went to hotel school. And after 1.5 years, I was still 15. We were asked as a class to write an essay what we now believe we feel about our work, our industry. There were ups and downs in this 1.5 years, but I was equipped. I was equipped with Psalm 91, verse 4, "He will take you on his wings." That was with me. That gave me strength, that gave me survival. Even though I didn't go to church anymore, I was not at home, I didn't have to, nobody told me to go and so on. I was there. That's just a side comment. And I went home from hotel school where I was told to write that essay. I don't mean to confuse you, jumping back and forth. And that evening, of course, I thought, what I'm going to write? 3 pages, what I now feel about the business. When I was working over there in the corner, cleaning a table with my back to the door, and I could feel the maitre d' had just walked into the room. When he entered the room, you knew it. His presence could be felt throughout the room. He would have never entered the room without looking absolutely perfect. He would have never been late or anything like that. He was perfect. At that time, tails and a shirt that was about 3 inches thick and never moved and so on. You could have shaved in his shoes. He was perfect. And I looked over, and he just went over to a table that happened to be a group of English people. He spoke English, spoke French, spoke German, explained wine, explained food, helped to finish the dishes, and so on. And I realized, when he went to a table, the guests were proud that he came to that table. And it hit me. In the eyes of the guest and in the eyes of us, the employees, he was the most important person in the room. Wait a minute, there's a reversal here. The guests are supposed to be the most important. Why he? And I decided to write about him in my essay. Because it was clear, generally to me, that he never came to work to work. He came to work to create excellence in his profession. He came to his work to create excellence. He was excellence. He manifested excellence. And I wrote an essay which I entitled, "We Are Ladies and Gentlemen, Serving Ladies and Gentlemen." And I explained, if we are excellent and create excellence in what we are doing, no matter what our profession, we will be respected and we'll define ourselves as excellent. And if we don't, then we are servants. So I took that with me. After 3 years, I went to work in a season in southern Germany, winter season. From there, I went to Switzerland, worked there for a while, and a season. I worked on the Holland America line on a ship. Went to France, worked 2 years in Paris. Went to England, worked a year there. And somebody said, "Do you want to work in the United States?" I said, "Well, why the heck not?" If they would have said India, I would have said the same thing. Americans always want to know, when they said, "Why did you come to the United States?" They want me to say, "Oh, I was looking for a free country. That's not why I came here. I don't want to disappoint you. I came here because the guy offered me a job and said, what the heck not?" So I came here. Worked on the ship, the same ship I worked on, to New York, took the Greyhound bus, went to Houston, stayed in the YMCA, and worked in the Hotel Corporation of America as a waiter. And there, this major shock happened. This something terrible happened the first day there. I had to serve fish without a fish fork. It was just terrible. How can you serve? They must be all barbarians here. They serve fish without a fish fork. And how do people sleep here? It was July. I came over in July, end of June. And I was staying in the YMCA there, but it was not air conditioned. I didn't know other people had air conditioned. I was staying in the YMCA. How could be? They must be all barbarians. They sleep in the heat and they don't use a fish fork. I'm going to go back. That's how crazy we think sometimes. I called a friend of mine and said, I can't stand it. I'm going to go back. He said, he was in San Francisco. He said, come to San Francisco. We need a waiter in a French restaurant. We have fish forks. I took a bus to San Francisco. Worked as a waiter and then a year. And then so I stayed another year and a little longer. And all of a sudden I said, wait, I better follow career. And then went on with the career. And I was all of a sudden conscious. All of a sudden, I had to take an assistant manager's job in a club, and I met Lester. I did in one evening in my French restaurant as a waiter. But I did it. Went from there to a similar club, to University Club, to Chicago, as food and beverage manager. Went to Hyatt. Went to Hilton. Became general manager, region vice president, corporate vice president. And then I got a call. Somebody said, we are starting a new hotel company. We need somebody to run the operation in Atlanta. I said, not interested. Not interested. Not all. I have my golden handcuffs. I'm a young star in Hyatt and in charge of 65 hotels in the United States, operations, food and beverage. Why would I leave? They kept on calling. And all of a sudden, Sherry, my wife, nearly 38 years, and I'm still in love. I don't only love her, I'm still in love. I'm in love. You know, being in love is nothing else but believing. It's a decision. You don't wait for a feeling. It's a decision. I made a decision to be in love and not just love her. As I made a decision to believe in God and follow God and Jesus and seek Him, it's a decision. But then we prayed. We had made a decision that we believe already. We prayed very heavy because they kept on calling for this job, where I said several times no. And something happened in my job that I questioned, and we moved here. And this hotel, two hotels in construction, one in Buckhead and one downtown, strategically, unbelievably intelligent. You start a new hotel company and do two hotels in the same city. That's very smart. But anyway, so here I came over to take over the operation of this company. I was promised we can go high-end. That was the commitment. I can operationally do what I want. Operationally do what I want. And come here. And as I said, we prayed heavy. It was disastrous the first 2 years, I can tell you. Well, it was nearly disaster for the next 18 years, but there was a lot of success too. But the first 2 years, man, was it a problem. So I went home to Sherry one day, but I didn't tell Sherry, my wife, because she had just had a baby. We couldn't sell our house in Chicago. We had a lot of debt. It was so many problems. So I didn't want to burden her that this was not working out. But then I felt I just have to, because she will be faced with the fact sooner or later. So I said, let's sit down on the terrace and I want to tell you something. I said, sweetheart, I have to tell you, I'm sorry, but we made a mistake moving here. And she looked at me and said, why would you argue with God? We prayed on it. Maybe the job doesn't work out, but we didn't make a mistake moving here. So why would you argue with God? I said, never again in front of you. So there we were. And then she created a prayer together with another lady in the company. I can tell you she prayed that prayer every day with that other lady. And I can tell you, when I decided to leave, it's called under urging of Sherry, because at that time I was traveling about 250 days a year. And I read that prayer to our staff. I called the staff together and told them I'm leaving. I read the prayer that she was praying. I can tell you, they all believed that I wrote that prayer a couple of weeks ago, because it stated and it prayed for what we were in the meantime, a respected worldwide company, and by the way, the number one brand in the world I didn't say that. That was determined by the Luxury Institute. That was Ritz-Carlton. So what happened in this Ritz-Carlton time? So, well, like when you start a new business, what do you do? You look at what industry you want to start a new business in. You look at what market segment. And what we did very carefully is looking, what does that market segment want? And I can tell you, in our business, that's probably the first time somebody did it. Carefully. Pretty scientifically. What do the customer in this market segment want from us? It was clear. We want to speak to the top market segment. It was clear. I hired people that had the same dream. We came for a vision, for a dream. It wasn't a plan, it was a dream to become the absolute leader in the top market segment in the hotel business. So we have to say, if I can give this market segment what it wants in my product, more sufficient to them than the competition can, and if at the same time I'm more efficient than the competition, then I have a great company. So I have to understand first, what do they want? That's the first thing I have to do if I run a company. I have to not think what is right for me. I was tempted always to say, I know what I want. In fact, I know better than they do. After all, I have a European accent. I know the hotel better than they. But I wasn't. I refrained from it. And I looked what the market segment wants. And then I looked, how can we make it efficient? Then we looked at the processes that it takes to deliver what that market segment wants. Very simple. We looked what processes that it take to deliver what they want. How can I do it all the time? And hopefully defect-free. Now, what did they want? And this is key element. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, leaders of businesses, do we know what the market wants? No, not what you want. What the market, your market wants. Do we really know that? That's the number one key question we have to ask ourselves, because we always try to put ourselves in there. You are an opinion of one. It's not a survey, what you have. It's what does the market want, and then deliver to that market what the market wants. And then be an example in it. And as you lead toward doing that, building that company and have people, you of course make sure you have people that are willing to deliver what that market wants, your employees. I mean, we have to ask ourselves a short question here. Who will do a better job, the employee who is controlled and has to do the job, or the employee who wants to do what you're doing? Well, I guess the answer is pretty simple. The employee who wants to do the job is a better employee than the one that has to do the job. Now, what do they want? What do they want? Let's stick that up for a moment. I know what your customers want. Do you? I know what your customers want. In fact, every one of your customers, I know what they want. Because there are three fundamental things that every customer wants, no matter what they buy. If it's legal service or a house or a bottle of water, whatever the heck they're buying, you, my market, you have three expectations if you buy anything. I have to understand that. Once I understand that, now, of course, in addition to those three fundamental things that everybody wants, their idiosyncrasies unique to everybody. Now, so I have to create my processes first around those three things. And then I have to, of course, build processes so I can react to the other things. So what are those three things? Let's say you want to buy a bottle of water. It's very simple. It's so simple. And that's why it is nearly dismissed. Even if I give this speech, you dismiss it, you forget it, because it's too simple. Yet it is so big. Why don't we get this? What do they want? What do you want when you buy a bottle of water? You want the product to be defect-free. You don't want it to leak. That's a subconscious expectation you have. You want the product to work, to be right, the car to run, the bicycle to run, or whatever. That's an expectation that you have. So you have to work on your product, of course. And you have to create processes to be sure that your product is defect-free in the expectation of the customer. Number two, what I want is timeliness. When you want this time, you don't want to wait for that bottle of water. You want it when you want it. Incidentally, if you don't understand that that today is a major, major issue, timeliness, you're missing something. I can tell you, when we opened our first Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead in January 1984, we knew that during rush hour in the evening, when people come and check in all together, it was a big hotel, that if they didn't wait longer than 4 minutes, they were okay. So we timed it. After 3 minutes, in fact, we went out with a soft drink and so on in the line that I waited. We know today it's 20 seconds. That's a fact. So this is a new customer. Do we understand the new customer? There are new customers out there. There's a new dialogue going on. There's new. The father of the customers from the day were fine. The father arrived in a suit and a tie. I'm obviously the speaker tonight because I have a tie on. The father arrived. I'm the father, okay. And the son shows up in blue jeans with holes in it and says, "Look here, I'm a dude like you." But you know what? They have much higher demands than the father ever had. Do it my way is the expectation. Do it my way. My money is valuable. It's the father. The father had a distance. The son says, "Come on, I'm just like you. Look here, I'm going to relax." So you have to be a little more relaxing. But 20 seconds. So number one, what they want is no defect. Number two, timeliness. And number three, what they want, what you want when you buy a bottle of water, you want that no defect, you want it in time, and you want the people that give it to you to be nice to you. Big deal. Yes. And guess what? And you won't accept it. I learn it all the time. I do some consulting on some boards. I learn it all the time. You're not accepting it. You think you're idea of creating. No, being nice is what the customer wants. And guess what? The greatest driver of customer satisfaction is being nice. It's being nice. It's the greatest driver of customer satisfaction. Yet, and everybody knows it, yet nobody has a process to create being nice. If that is so important to our customers, and I'm saying, "Well, I'm B2B. Oh, that is such a baloney. I mean, B2B, wait a minute, business to business, that means, for some of you. That still means a human being in your company talks to the human being in another company in this moment, and in the other company's opinion about your company depends on that one human being you're talking to. Shall I repeat that, or did you get it? That's it, that's not business to business, it's human being to human being. And if you're not nice to that human being in the other company, business to business, you are going to have the wrong opinion pretty soon in that company. So those are the three things the customer wants. And then they have other idiosyncrasies which you have to learn, have processes to respond to. We teach, for instance, this process. It's all process driven. We teach within 12 feet. Silly things we write down. It's written 12 feet in parentheses 3 meters. 12 feet is actually 4 meters. But anyway, that's written, just doesn't mean anything, I just tell you. So we write, within 12 feet, you, no matter what you're doing, you look up and you greet the customer and respond to the customer. What they want. Depends on, do they want to be formal? Do they want to be informal? Within 12 feet, guess what? That actually comes to your store, to your place, to your business, or that calls you, makes a decision about you. These are, by the way, I'm giving you all facts. Those are all facts. If you don't agree with me, it means that you're wrong. Yes. Yes. They make a decision about you and your company the first instant when they presume that they made contact with you. Then they make a subconscious decision about you. This may be on the telephone, this may be in person or whatever. That's why we teach within 12 feet, because we know that's when the decision is being made. You look at them and say, "Welcome." We teach our people there are three words you should never say. Don't say hi. Because they're ladies, they're not your friends, they're ladies and gentlemen. And you are a lady and gentleman. You say, welcome, good morning, good afternoon. Make them feel important in order to move them to loyalty. If you are a great company, the number one thing you're going to do is create customer loyalty. Is creating customer loyalty. There are three types of customers. There are dissatisfied customers. There are terrorists against your company. They like to talk bad about you in a cocktail party or wherever. And then there are dissatisfied customers. They are not yours. They deal with somebody else if they have a better deal over here. And then there are the loyal customers that deal with you no matter what. Why? What is loyalty? Loyalty is nothing else but developed trust in you, in your company, and your product. That's loyalty. It's not something strange. They trust you. Here's the good thing. All relationships start with distrust. So when you have them, to start new loyalty is not, doesn't happen very easily because they're loyal to you and they don't trust the others. It's not conscious, it's also subconscious. So you made contact with them. So it's in a great company, number one, it's loyalty you work on. And then you work on three other things. But it cannot interfere with the loyalty. Number two, what you do. Number one, you create loyalty. And that means being nice, taking care. It means doing the three things we talked about and responding to it, to their individuality. Are you still with me or are you used to my accent by now? Yeah? Shall I start from the beginning because you didn't understand until now? Okay. I could. So, number one, keep the customer. Number two, get new ones. Number three, get as much money as you can from each customer. Oh, wait a minute, without losing them. Without losing them, in other words, you give them value. I can tell you, and we have three inns in New Zealand where we have a 98% loyalty factor. We measure our loyalty of our customer ongoing. 98% of our customer in those three inns say, I want to come back and I want to recommend you. On a scale of 1 to 10, tens, we only count tens. Our average rate in those hotels is $3,000 a night. But others, they feel it's worth it, more than worth it. Has nothing to do with price. I get as much money as I can from them without hitting loyally. And so keep the customer, get new ones, get as much money as you can, and work efficiently. That's what you do. Now, how you do all that? How do you do all that? Well, you do that with employees. You do this, you don't do it, I don't do it, I'm sitting in my office somewhere. They don't even know that I exist, unless they have a complaint and they find me. I'm telling you, they do. Unquestionably. So how do you accomplish? Well, it's a process. It's a process. It's having the right employees to start with. It's not hiring people, it's selecting people. We have a very sophisticated selection process so that we know pretty well, I know 75% this employee will work out in this particular job category because it's sophisticated and well established. So the first process in order for the employees to be aligned is selecting. But what are you selecting them for, ladies and gentlemen? Hey, wait a minute, here we come back to being pre-Christian companies. Are you selecting your employees? Are you hiring? Look here, I'm not talking to you now. I'm talking to the ones outside. So don't anybody get insulted by me. I'm talking to myself too here. Are you hiring those employees to fulfill a certain function in your business? In my business, do we hire them to check people in? Do we hire them to cook food, to make clean rooms, toilets and so on? I submit to you that's immoral. Hiring for function is immoral. The chair on which you're sitting is fulfilling a function, ladies and gentlemen. Particularly us as Christians certainly shouldn't hire people to fulfill a function. We should hire people to join our dream, to join our vision, our objective, Adam Smith made a study 300 years ago. Hey, 300 years ago. He made a study and found that the human being cannot relate to orders and directions. And what we do in businesses, we hire people for a function, then we give them orders and directions. Now, that shouldn't happen with us as Christian companies to start with. We should hire people to join us, to be part of an objective motive and objective, as he found out long time ago. We found out long time ago. Motive and objective. But do we have most companies? And I look here, I've worked with many companies. They don't have, the objective is not clear. The dream is not clear. The vision of your company should be an exciting dream as to where you're going to be 5 years from now. Our dream in Ritz-Carlton said, we will be the leader in the hotel business. We are writing a notebook about service. Do you want to join us? Become part of our dream. Be part of it. Be part of creating the next dimension of customer service. Be part of writing a new book about our industry. Join us. And here's what we have to do. It's clearly established. It's in writing. Every employee has it. Every employee has the vision, the mission, the objective, everything very clear. In most companies, the employee starts to work. When the employee starts, the first thing is the right selection. The next thing you do is the right orientation. How do we select usually in our business? I don't know about yours. You answer the question how you do it in your business, how you hire people. If the guy can walk from this desk to here in my business without falling down because he's too drunk, we hire them. He's qualified. Because we are in an industry where I can tell you there's no hotel in the United States, so much for unemployment, blah, blah, blah. There's no hotel in the United States that don't need people, that's not short of employees. Only some people don't like to do the jobs that we have. But there is none. That's why we hire the next guy that walks in. Selection, careful, painful selection. So he or she fits into the work category. The next thing is orientation. Orient them in the first 55 Ritz-Carlton, I opened. I went there for the training, for the orientation. And when I went in the room, a group of people like you, 400, 500, 600 people sitting there, and I get introduced as the president, CEO of the company, here comes the big guy, oh, here comes Mr. Schulze, blah, blah. And I went into the room and said, good afternoon, my name is Horst Schulze. I'm president, CEO of the company. I am very important. Whoop, shock. They look at you with shock. I said, yes. But so are you. Very important. Because no human being can claim importance over the next. And you are employees, but you are to me, ladies and gentlemen, who are respected part of our company, and I need you. No human being can claim importance over the next. What about your job? Is it important? Is mine important? Well, let me tell you something. If you don't come to work in 10 days when we open the hotel and we don't wash dishes, we have a disaster. If we don't check people in, we have a disaster. If we don't make the beds, we have a disaster. Your job is very important. If I don't come to work one day, nobody knows. So come in, join us. Join us, and what you're doing, what the function that you're fulfilling is only a function to fulfill the dream that we have, to be the best in our industry, to be respected because we be the best. And if you go for a job one day, and there are 100 people applying for the job, you will get it because you have created a great image around this company. It's you. We work for an image. We work for an objective. We work for a dream. We don't come to work for work. We come to work to be excellent. Join me in that. If you don't feel like it, we take a break a little later. Don't come back in. Nobody will know. Sneak out. Because we have to work a little bit more. And the most of the work that we have to do more is being friendly to people, respecting people, honoring people, responding to people, not only the guests, but each other. So that's how we build a company. That was process number two. Process number three, of course, we taught them the function. Of course, we had to teach the function. But the function was built on a belief system. The function is only there in order to accomplish the objective, which I can tell you with utmost sincerity. Once I wrote down the objectives of the company, I agonized for days. Is this objective good for all concerned? Obviously, the customers, the investors, the owners of the hotels. We don't own hotels, we manage hotels. The employees and society. If it's good for all concerned, in that moment, I will stay on it. I become the leader for that objective. So what is leadership? Leadership is clearly to have an objective. What do we do usually when we hire people? Do we give them the objective when they come for orientation the first day? Here is what usually happens. Let's look in the mirror. I don't know about you, but in my business, here is what usually happens. The new employees come to work, and the manager makes the pathetic team speech. We're a team here. We're a team. We're a team now. Join the team. Now, if you're a team, you should have an objective. The very definition of a team is to help each other toward a common goal. But here's going, it's just about the team. And then the manager says, and in fact, Joe, you're new. This is Bill. He is here 9 months already. Follow him. He will show you the ropes. They're not even in the rope business. And then Joe follows Bill. And on the way to the kitchen or to wherever, Bill tells him, this company is the worst. That's his orientation. We did the orientation. I did the orientation. And our managers do the orientation. Here is our heart and soul. Join me. Here is our dream. Join. You're not here to work. You're here to accomplish this dream by working. And that is, of course, the very definition of the model of leadership, to have that vision and align people toward the vision. The second thing in leadership is to be committed to it, not have a pipe dream, but be committed. The third step in that model of leadership, is to initiate the steps that it takes to get to that vision in 5 or 10 years, whatever it is, what we dream. The dream should be beautiful. The dream should be exciting. If the dream is not accomplished, at least the journey will be beautiful. So we join, we share it. The manager, clearly, the leader has to have that commitment and start the initiative. The breakdown in men and leaders, that happens. And believe me, I studied that, not scientifically. I studied it. Unscientific statement here. The difference between managers and leaders. The leader stays focused on the vision. The manager, very soon after, starts making excuses as to why it may not work. And I saw it all the time with so many managers. The managers, when you came and asked them, how about your hotel? The managers immediately said, if I had a different restaurant, if I had a larger ballroom, if constantly excuses, the leader said, within a year, this city will think of my hotel as their hotel and everybody will love it. This so constantly focused on the dream while the manager focused on excuses. That's the model of a leader. And that leader aligns the employees behind the vision, behind the objective, and teaches them the processes, teaches them. And finally, what we did, now remember, what we did to keep the employees aligned to us, we showed them the vision, we had the right orientation, we selected them right, we had the right orientation, we taught them the process, and finally, we sustained what we taught them in the beginning. The points that we taught them, there were basically 24 points that we taught them the first 3 days. And I knew if this is done 100%, we still make a lot of mistakes most likely. But if that is done, we are probably a better hotel than anybody else has. But certainly we are friendlier. We taught those things very carefully. And from there on, as soon as the hotel opened, we teach those 24 points, keep on teaching them. Every day, still in my company now, in my office, you can come and visit me at 9:35 in the morning. We have what we call a lineup, where we repeat one of those points, 24 points. In 24 days, we repeat it again. Because those 24 points, I have to remind them. And I'm, of course, managers were embarrassed to repeat and repeat it every 24 days again. And said, come on, they know it. It's kind of embarrassing. Well, wait a minute. Is there anybody in this room who doesn't know what Coca-Cola is? Everybody knows what Coca-Cola is. Then why the heck do they still advertise? Yes. Yes, they know it. But do you drink it? You have to be reminded. Same thing this. Keep it alive. So we have the right selection, the right orientation, the right teaching process, and we sustain it. We keep it alive. Today, for example, in every hotel, our hotel, if that is in China or in Russia or in Indonesia or in Singapore or in Mexico or in Alabama, we were teaching point number 11. Point number 11 says, when a guest encounters any difficulties, you are responsible to own it. If he had a problem with the toilet in this room, you are the waiter, you own the toilet. And you say, please forgive me. I will take care of it. In fact, I feel bad. I buy you breakfast. They're empowered. They're aligned. They're empowered. They own it. They will be reminded today. They will be reminded of that. And we give them examples of what happened. So we are aligning the employees to what we're doing. And we're reminding them the 24 points which they learned the first 3 days in orientation. That's how we did it. Now, what is Christian about that? What Christian about it is that in the process, management respecting the employees as ladies and gentlemen, because that's expected too, not only they say they are, they're learning that. And each manager becoming a mentor, and the leader, the president, the CEO, should be a mentor to all. Mentor doesn't mean necessarily you sit down with them and help them through. Mentor is showing what it is. I make sure that I'm a mentor in it. I make sure they know my belief system. And when I come Friday mornings when we meet in our little Bible class for over 30 years with Bobby Mitchell, and sometimes we get carried away fixing the world. I don't understand why they don't get it, what we're fixing. I come late to our lineup in the office, and I always say, please forgive me, you know Fridays I go to Bible class. That's why I'm late. Everybody knows who I am. And we live, and the number one thing, we give the employee the respect of Christians. After all, the employees are neighbors. Love your neighbor as yourself. Wow, an overwhelming statement in our word, in the word of God. It overwhelmed me when I really internalized that, that Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, who is your neighbor? Of course, you start with your family, with your neighbors around you, with you, certainly your employees. The question is, are we an example to them? Can we stand out and say, can we? And we have to challenge ourselves. I have to challenge myself to say, no more. I would like to challenge any manager on that. Are we better, more caring, more respecting? Not compromising. Compromising doesn't fit in being a great leader, because when you compromise anything, you compromise the goal, the objective. That means you compromise what is good for all concerned. No, not compromising. Not being a compromising leader, but are you a leader that is, are we better leaders? Are we more caring? Are we more respecting? Are we better mentors? Are we better coaches than non-Christian leaders? Gosh, please, let's answer that to ourselves. So, if we, 37 years from now, we meet, how many people have we shown that we are Christians? Christian leaders in our business, caring, respecting, loving our neighbors as ourselves. That can be so easy misunderstood. I had people in my managers in my business misunderstand. Well, you said, I said, wait a minute, I didn't say to compromise, because that moment you didn't love the rest of the company, the rest of the people that we serve. In this moment, you didn't love the owners. In this moment, you didn't love the society. In this moment, you didn't love the customers, because you compromised and you excused something that you should not excuse. I'm not talking about that. Do we love our employees more than anybody who is not a Christian leader out there? That's the questions I believe we have to ask ourselves and become an example. I would love to challenge us and every manager out there, every leader out there, to say, what can we do in the next 37 years or in the next year or in the next 3 months and so on to show the world that we are Christian, that being Christian is better, is more. I would like to challenge that. I tried badly, and I can assure you, when I sat down for 3 days praying that I do the right thing for all concerned, when I change anything, I sit down and say, is this good for all concerned? Then I can stick to it and be tough about it, because I know it's good for all concerned and it's good for my neighbors. And that's how we run Ritz-Carlton, that's how Ritz-Carlton grew, and that's how we run our little company that I'm trying badly to get rid of so I have more time. So I can do, because so now it is to get rid of business and really finish well. So thank you for allowing me again to speak to you. I hope I didn't bore you to death. I love you all. Thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I hope I served you right.
What?
I hope I served you right. Thank you, thank you.